Straight Talk on WRHI FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. Well, right across the street from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, is this place called Winthrop University. And we regularly bring on people from Winthrop because it's such a big part of our economy and what goes on around here. And today we have Kevin Hughes. Kevin is one of the vice presidents, but he is the vice president of university advancement at Winthrop University, a job he's had for almost 3 years now, right?
That is correct.
All right, he's still here, too.
Yay! Still here and still loving it.
Attaboy. So tell everybody a little bit about Kevin Hughes before we start talking about what you do.
Sure. So I actually started off my career, spent close to a decade working in politics, primarily at the state level, dabbled a little bit at the federal level, but primarily throughout the Midwestern part of the United States. Did a lot of political fundraising during that time frame, and that was what led to my pivot towards working in higher education development work. And so I've now been working in higher ed development going on 16 years now. And as you said, I've been at Winthrop here for close to 3 years and just having a great time in terms of really forming connections with members of our community, but our alumni community throughout the world, which numbers close to 70,000 here at Winthrop. And certainly not only just to connecting with them and engaging, but also raising the necessary financial resources to advance the university.
So this position, is this one that is new since Edward Cerna arrived, or is it one that was in place and was functioning before you got here?
Absolutely was in place and functioning for a long time prior to myself. Going back to even the late 70s, early 80s is when even at public institutions like Winthrop, where individuals were hired to do this type of work in terms of not only just, like I said, alumni relations, but also raising those financial resources to kind of enhance the university.
So your job is to spread the faith about Winthrop, talk to people, all kinds of people. You say you got 70,000 alumni, you can communicate with them, business, industry, local, regional, whatever, about the story over here, correct?
Correct.
So give me a pitch. Tell me what you would say, what you are saying, to businesses that know nothing about Winthrop University, except that it's here in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Well, so really one of the things that we're always trying to do is to find areas of commonality. So whether it is with a corporation or in the case of the work that we do in our office, it tends to be more commonly with individuals. We are looking for what is that connection between us? What's that area of commonality? And how can we help each other? And really kind of identifying where their priorities may align with the priorities of the institution and, again, how we help one another.
So if you're going out to, who knows, one of our local manufacturers and talking to them about Winthrop University, they're going to say something to you like, well, here's what I need. I'm looking for people who have this kind of skill set, computer skill set, problem solving, whatever. And you're going to say,
what I'm going to say is, you know, look at the curriculum that we currently have, but also, and we were talking a little bit about this before we went on the air, is as we have evolved our academic curriculum here at Winthrop, two of the things that we are keeping in mind as we evolve that curriculum is, one, we want to be responsive to what it is that our customers, quote unquote, want to study. So we're really looking at high school students and the types of the areas of study that they're looking for as they ponder their college decision. But also we want to be responsive to workforce needs from regional employers as well. So we are in the midst, actually this coming fall, we're going to be launching our first engineering program in software engineering. But also at the same time, our provost is also out there having those conversations with other employers to determine what other types of programs do we need to fulfill the workforce needs of regional employers, but that we think that are also going to be attractive to students as well. So trying to kind of make that marriage work.
So when that kind of conversation takes place and Sebastian comes back and says, this really looks like something we need to do. Mm-hmm. There is a process, I gather, you must go through to create this. So you just don't click your fingers and boom, it's there.
Correct. And, you know, we want to make all these decisions that are data informed. So just because someone thinks that something is a good idea, we want to make sure that we're looking at the data to ensure that there is, in fact, a student population that would find a particular academic program attractive. And that, again, we are fulfilling a workforce need or fulfilling a need in the community. Obviously, some of the things that kids study, obviously college is about obtaining a job following graduation, but obviously it's broader than just that as well. But really kind of looking at the data. But to your point, it is absolutely a process. As a public institution, you know, we have to go to the Commission on Higher Education in Columbia to get all new academic programs approved. Obviously, there's concern on the part of the state ensuring that we don't have too many duplicative programs with our other competitors throughout the state and our peers. So there is that process that we do go through with the state to get any such new academic programs approved.
You know, I think it's interesting that Winthrop and York Technical College, for instance, have got a partnership. I don't know what it's formally called, but for somebody who goes through 2 years at York Technical College and thinks they need more than what they got at mm-hmm. Tech, they can zoom right on over here and somehow credits transfer and what have you, and 2 more years they got a 4-year degree.
Absolutely, and we've been really aggressive these past couple of years in terms of forming additional partnerships and pathways with other technical schools throughout the region. We were really proud of the fact that just this past year, we executed the first cross-border site pathway with Central Piedmont Community College up in Charlotte, which provides an opportunity for their students to be able to easily transfer to Winthrop upon the completion of their associate's degree there. So we've absolutely worked very closely, and sometimes it's very program-specific. So with York Tech in particular, we're looking at certain programs in terms of things that their students are studying there that will make for a seamless transfer to Winthrop with some of those particular programs.
So I think most people are aware that a really well-known name around here, Limestone College, is going out of business. I guess they're out of business now.
Yes.
At the end of the school year. I would imagine that Winthrop hoisted its sail and ran on up there and said, hey, look, we can work with you to get your credits on down here and finish up your education.
We can, and we did. So actually, the first week, shortly after Limestone's official announcement about their closure, they actually hosted a college fair on their campus for their students, of which Winthrop was a participant there, in which staff from our enrollment office went down to visit with those students to kind of explain what the process looks like, what the pathways are. And as a result, we did have a number of students from Limestone apply to Winthrop. We're actually still kind of going through that process. Many of those students have already received a financial aid offer and package from Winthrop. I don't have an exact number right now, but I do know that a number of them have accepted. Last I heard, we were somewhere in the mid-30s in terms of the number of Limestone students that were, in fact, planning to transfer to Winthrop. And that's a mixture of both undergrad as well as graduate. We have certain programs here at Winthrop that are very popular, that were also very popular at Limestone. So we're seeing a preponderance of those transfers in some of those very specific disciplines, social work being one of them in particular, both at the undergraduate as well as at the graduate level.
Oh, boy, that's good to hear. That's really good to hear, especially for those moms and dads who had kids up at Limestone trying to figure out, okay, what's happened to that education?
Absolutely. It's a very traumatic experience to have to, as a student, to experience something like that and to really wonder about, you know, what's next for you. I mean, you think about somebody that is a junior, for example, that has simply 1 year left. Are my credits going to transfer? What am I going to do? I'm so close to graduation. And so that was something that obviously our enrollment folks here at Winthrop, as well as other universities and colleges throughout the region, were really there to try to help those students in their time of need.
Higher education has really become a very competitive business, has it not? I mean, when you take a look at whatever they call that, the bell curve or the population curve, and you see that our population is getting smaller.
Because the enrollment cliff, they call it.
The enrollment cliff. Explain that to me.
So basically what that says is, I believe it is this upcoming year in which we will hit our peak in terms of, throughout the United States, the number of high school seniors that will be graduating. And then moving forward, that number is going to decrease year after year. And so obviously you've got, you know, how many universities and colleges throughout the country that are going to be competing for a smaller pool of talent. And you're seeing in some ways a bifurcation in the higher education market, in which the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And as we were talking again a little bit earlier, some of these, in particular smaller privates in which Limestone would have fallen into that category, for example, it's become an incredibly tough environment. It's tough for everybody, don't get me wrong, but for certain schools, and particularly smaller privates, it's really, really difficult. And quite frankly, it's challenging even for places like Winthrop, who we are certainly on the smaller side when you compare us to folks like Clemson and Carolina. But it's a competitive environment even for the large institutions like Clemson and Carolina as well. It's just we're fighting over a smaller piece of the pie. Now, the good thing is from a geographic standpoint, the enrollment cliff doesn't hit us here in South Carolina as hard as it does in other places throughout the country, such as the Northeast and the Midwest. And so when you see some of the closures that are occurring, some of the mergers and the acquisitions that are occurring, there is a real preponderance of that occurring in the Northeast and Midwestern part of the United States. And it's because of the population growth that we're experiencing here in the Southeast.
In fact, I had an article this morning from U.S. News and World Report. They did some kind of study based on online searches. And the top, well, the number one and the number four states that more people are moving to are South Carolina, number one, and North Carolina, number four. How about that? I mean, that's encouraging news.
It is.
And they're moving here for a variety of reasons. A lot has to do with quality of life, the outdoors, you know, better living conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So this fight over the smaller piece of pie, what is that? I mean, that means you have to sharpen your tools and your toolbox.
It is. Well, and so one of the things that comes to mind as you just quote that article and those statistics is, you know, right now our student body, we're 90% in-state, 10% out-of-state. But what is happening is everyone else throughout the country is reading those same articles that you just cited. And so what we're starting to see is a lot more competition from our northern competitors. So folks who are coming down to South Carolina trying to woo our students to come out of state to their institutions. And so, you know, we're needing to fight a little bit more for those in-state students to get them. But we also need to think more broadly as well. And so we need to be thinking about you know, how we're attracting students from elsewhere as well. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, as a public institution, we're here to serve the residents of South Carolina and the students of South Carolina. But we also need to be able to think more broadly about our strategies as well in terms of where we find those students.
And part of that strategy is what you all did here, I guess it was earlier this year, when you, maybe it was last year, when you announced that you were taking a wholesale look at your tuitions and the fees that you're charging. And in fact, I think you cut a few of them, did you not?
We did. We cut our tuition. A big part of this, and we actually called it the Tuition Transparency Initiative. So there were several aspects to this. One, it was about cutting our tuition, but also being more transparent of how those costs are. So we are actually, for this upcoming academic year, we are moving towards a per credit hour charge. Which is somewhat common on the graduate school level, maybe not as common at all institutions on the undergraduate level, but it's on a per credit hour. So that way, you know, a student is paying for the credit hours that they are taking, very direct. And so being very transparent, I had a conversation with a friend about a year ago whose daughter was going to a different institution and was expressing their surprise about hidden fees that they became aware of once they actually matriculated to the school and that particular student got into their chosen field of study. Now, their son was actually going into the natural sciences, which involved a lot of lab work.
Right.
And so there were some pretty significant fees associated with that individual, with that student being in that particular course of study. And so that you do find that in higher ed sometimes. And so we're trying to be a little bit more transparent here at Winthrop in terms of what your total costs are going to be.
That must be a monumental undertaking to go through everything that's offered on a college campus and try to put a dollar figure on that.
It's challenging.
My God.
It's challenging. Ooh.
So you're ready to launch that? I mean, it's being launched now?
It is being launched in terms of, so we've already communicated with our existing student body that's going to be returning next year, as well as our incoming students in terms of what this new model of tuition looks like.
Hmm. Well, a lot of this gets right back to what your job is all about, trying to build a healthy endowment. And we're going to jump into that after we take our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax here with Founders. And by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Well, John Reinhardt has showed up. Yep, he's a groupie. He likes to come here, get autographs, all that kind of stuff, hand out his business cards. what we do here at Substation 2, fresh subs and salads 6 days a week. How we do it is in the white letters, and I want you to participate at the count of three. Are you ready? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Sandwich lovers, Substation 2 is celebrating another year of deliciousness. This is Charlie Ruffalo. For 39 years, Substation 2 has been creating signature subs piled high with premium meats and cheeses and big, crisp salads with lots of fresh veggies. On June 6th, our first 39 customers will win one free sub every month for an entire year. And the next 39 customers will snag an incredible 39% discount on any one order. Enjoy a taste of tradition crafted with love for 39 years and counting. Substation 2, where every bite is a celebration. Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
We know the type. You like to start early, finish late, make lemon squares, and make payments to the college fund from anywhere in the house. We know you rely on Comporium for things you rely on most, like a view of the backyard. That's just a bunny, and hundreds of channels to watch, whenever you want. So you may think of us as just your internet company, but we're more like the I didn't know they could do all that company. Comporium, always ready.
If you have tried traditional weight loss methods of diet, exercise, and medications and failed to see lasting results, you may be a candidate for bariatric surgery at Piedmont Medical Center, Fort Mill. Our three board-certified surgeons have performed more than 1,000 minimally invasive robotic surgical weight loss procedures, which can be very effective in long-term management of weight. Piedmont Medical Center, Fort Mill, offering comprehensive weight management and weight loss services supporting patients on their journey to wellness. Learn more online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Attention sublovers, Substation 2 is turning 39 and we're celebrating. This is Charlie Ruffalo. Be one of the first 39 customers through our doors on June 6th and win one free sub every month for an entire year. But wait, there's more. The next 39 customers will snag an incredible 39% discount on any one order placed by June 5th, 2026. It's a sandwich sensation at Substation 2. Come join us June 6th as we celebrate 39 years of mouth-watering subs and salads. Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2. Jerry Road across from Winthrop. Kevin Hughes is with us. He's Winthrop's Vice President of University Advancement. And when you define that in English, what does that mean? University Advancement.
I know. It's kind of, you know, it's an interesting term that most folks don't understand. The easiest way for me to explain it is we really work to advance the mission of the institution externally with external partners. So, you know, our primary focus is with our alumni, but it is also the community members and those regionally that support us as well.
You know, I can remember, oh my gosh, many, 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 many years ago, when a fellow by the name of Tony DiGiorgio was the president of Winthrop, a job he had for 24 years, I believe. I think back that far, there wasn't really an endowment at Winthrop. In fact, I believe he got the doggone thing started. And when they made their first $1 million or whatever it was, there was a big, you know, big party for that.
Yeah.
You've heard these stories.
I have.
So they have been building upon that.
Correct.
And your job is to make that much, much, much bigger.
That is correct.
So the dollars that you are able to raise from your partners, you know, whether they be families or companies or what have you, you invest those dollars to make them bigger, and then you take a portion of what you earn off those dollars and plug it back into the university?
That is correct, partially correct. So when a donor makes a gift, it typically falls into one of two general buckets. One is to either build that endowment, which you referred to, and our current endowment is close to about $90 million here at Winthrop.
Wow.
Obviously fluctuates with the market as that's invested in the market. Or sometimes when donors make gifts, they are for what we term to be current use. And so those funds are, think of it like a checking or a savings account. We could fully expend those dollars tomorrow if we wished. However, with the endowment, the idea behind endowment is for that to exist in perpetuity.
Yep.
And so what we do is, and this is any other nonprofit organization that has an endowment, or certainly any other college or university with an endowment, they have what's referred to as a spending policy. And our spending policy here at Winthrop says that we are only going to take 4% of our endowment on an annual basis to actually expend for the purposes for which those dollars were donated. And we also calculate that 4% by looking over 20 quarters. So we try to smooth it out, for example. And the purpose behind that is, let's say, for example, investments are going like gangbusters. We're doing really, really well. We don't want to get too greedy and take too much off of that market high. On the flip side, we might be going through a recession or, you know, heaven forbid, a depression, and the markets have really tanked. That would then really limit our ability at that point in time, if our endowment value were to decrease, to take a much smaller amount. So we try to smooth that out over 20 quarters, so obviously a five-year average, and we take 4%.
Now, is that 4% of the corpus or 4% of the gain of the endowment?
It is 4% of the overall value of the endowment.
Okay. So let's just use $90 million, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say that that's the number. You'd be taking 4% of that $90 million.
Correct.
Or whatever that is, $360,000, something like that.
Correct. And when I say that our endowment is $90 million, one of the interesting things is, of that amount, we have several hundred individual funds that make up that endowment. So we've got a general pot of money in there that is unrestricted, but that actually makes up a very, very tiny slice of the endowment. More notably is the fact that individual donors, they establish their own personal endowment. And so you would have the John Smith Endowed Scholarship. We will take 4% of that John Smith Endowed Scholarship and award that to a student based on the criteria that that original donor formulated with us.
And I know you deal with all different sizes of people's capabilities. Let's put it that way.
Correct.
But to set up all these individual funds, is there some kind of a minimum that you would expect from that? I mean, somebody who graciously wants to give you $1,000, you're not going to go through all this exercise to create an individual fund for $1,000.
That is correct. Okay. So that individual could use that $1,000 gift to add to an existing endowed fund. However, for someone that wants to establish their own endowed fund, we have a minimum here at Winthrop of $25,000.
Okay.
And again, most organizations that have such endowments have such minimums in place. Those minimums vary from institution to institution. For us, as I said, it's $25,000. However, individuals have the opportunity to spread those payments out over a period of years. Typically, a 3 to 5 year pledge period is pretty standard that you see throughout the industry.
So, with all this being said, I mean, I can't imagine trying to manage several hundred different ideas about what I want to do for Winthrop University. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Well, that goes back actually to the question you posed earlier in terms of the conversations that we have with businesses and individuals. It's about finding an alignment of priorities. So it's one thing for me to share with a potential donor what the priorities of the institution are, but I want to understand, what are your priorities as a donor or a potential donor, as a philanthropist? What is it that you hope to accomplish? Or more commonly now, we're talking a lot about what's the return on investment that you're looking for, to, you know, borrow from business terminology. Folks want to understand, what's my investment in Winthrop going to bring back? Not for themselves personally, but they want to understand what the return for the institution is going to be. One of the hypothetical questions that I like to pose to a lot of donors is, let's forget about money for a second. Let's not even think about that. If you could change one thing at Winthrop tomorrow, what is it that you would change?
Good point.
And that at least then gives me an idea of what really kind of motivates that person. And then I can take that idea and move it down to what someone's financial capability really is, whether it's that $25,000 or maybe it's somebody that has the capability of making a $1 million gift. And we can then talk about something that fits into what it is that they envision that they would want to change. You know, so for some individuals, they really want to support our students. You know, they want to be able to provide a tuition-free experience for some of our students, or to relieve the financial burden for some of our students. For other individuals, they want to be able to support our faculty and some of the research endeavors that our faculty members have. Or maybe they look at one of our buildings and they want to help repair and renovate one of our buildings. We can talk about what those needs are, and we can right-size it for whatever fits their philanthropic budget, if you will.
Whatever floats their boat.
That's
what
right.
It boils down to.
But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that, again, our priorities align with their priorities as well. You know, sometimes throughout my career, I've been put in that awkward position where a donor has an idea of something they would like to fund, but it's not something that aligns with our priorities. And so sometimes you have to say thanks, but no thanks.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, it's rare, but it does happen.
I would, you know, I would imagine the wish list of people you talk to could be all over the place in terms of what we would like to see. Curriculum stuff, I can see that. You know, for business, we want to get more of this, more of that.
Mm-hmm.
For those who have graduated and have maybe run their own business and have been successful with it, maybe they want to make sure that a thing like entrepreneurship can somehow be facilitated at Winthrop University,
mm-hmm.
that we can grow a group of men and women who are willing to take risks and get into business and try to do what others have done before them.
Yes.
Which I think is, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but I think that's becoming a dying art, which is, I think, sad.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. How would you answer that one?
Well, you know, it's interesting because so many of our donors, they want to support people in programs, to your kind of to your exact point. And I think scholarship is kind of the default. But really, we talk with donors also about ensuring that these students have the tools to succeed during their time at Winthrop as well. And it's that career preparation, whether it is for a traditional 9-to-5 job or whether it's that entrepreneurship type thing. We've actually got a wonderful partnership with York County Natural Gas in which they have helped fund just this past year what we were called the Epic Challenge, in which a set of our students were presented with a problem from York County Natural Gas, and the students were able to work on that problem and suggest solutions to that problem and to kind of instill that entrepreneurial mindset. And then there was actually a cash prize involved with that student for the, you know, for the winning team. So it's things like that in terms of how we can provide support to Winthrop and provide support to our students to really enhance their educational experience.
So when you get these ideas from people you're talking to, and you don't have an immediate answer to this, do you go back and maybe pull together some of your colleagues at Winthrop and say, look, I got somebody out here who's presented a good idea, and they may be willing to put some dollars behind it to make it happen, but I don't know how we make it happen.
Do that all the time. And I talk about that, you know, we do not operate within a silo. My faculty and staff partners throughout the campus play an invaluable role in helping us facilitate a lot of the gifts that we close. You know, I call our faculty our subject matter experts in that, you know, one of the challenges of my job and my colleagues that work in my office or our office is the fact that we need to be a jack of all trades. We need to know a little bit about everything that's going on at the university. But if I have a donor, for example, that's interested in environmental science, I need to go to our environmental science faculty to have them really speak in great depth about what it is that they are doing in that particular area. But to your point, Manning, I mean, we sometimes do have donors that come up with ideas where I need to go back and consult with our faculty, with fellow staff to see, does this make sense for Winthrop? Is this something that even in the case of where this individual is going to put dollars behind this, does this make sense for Winthrop?
Great. Kevin, I could talk to you for 2 days, but we're out of time. We got to call it game, set, match. Good job. Good work. Good for you. $90 million, that's very, very good, and that's been growing ever since you got here. Good for you. Keep up
the
good work.
We're working on it.
All right, and that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, what we do here at Substation 2, it's magic in its own. It's called Fresh Subs and Salads. We do it 6 days a week. We're right across from the hallowed halls of Winthrop University. How we do it? Pretty straightforward. You don't even have to have a college degree. You could go, I won't say that. Anyway, how we do it at the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.